Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Colorado's largest traffic pileup in years has stacked up cars and trucks coming down the hill on I-70 from the tunnel today. A 75-car pileup that's injured almost 20 people. The crash happened around 3:30 this afternoon, technically on the Highway 6 East on-ramp to I-70, right there in front of Loveland Ski Area. The left lane of westbound 70 is now closed so they can get emergency vehicles in and out, and all of the lanes of I-70 East are closed east of the tunnel. Our Matt Renew is up there for us. And Matt, what is the current state of things several hours in terms of getting the blockage of cars and trucks out?
Kyle, the current status is that they're making really good headway. They've probably gotten through more than half of those 75, 78 cars that are involved in this crash. But as you can see, they got a lot of work to do. There's an SUV that was thrown up onto the back of a tow truck that was already carrying cars. So it is a mess along these eastbound lanes of I-70. They still got a lot of work, probably several more hours into the evening before they can get this interstate clear. And it is just a demolition derby, a pile up of cars that just loaded up onto each other. Low visibility, icy conditions caused all of these cars coming out of the Eisenhower Johnson tunnels to start piling up onto each other. Drivers say it was just a wave of steel that started pushing them from behind and then down the interstate, and then 78 cars later they were all piled up. It was a big mess. And it is going to take some time for all of these crews to clean it up. And it was some scary moments for drivers caught in the crash.
It wasn't horribly icy, but you couldn't see well. And the snow was starting to stick to the windshield. And you were kind of like leaning over a little bit to try and see. And then saw the cars in front of you start jackknifing and then slowed down and stopped about 45 yards back. And then saw tractor trailers jackknifing behind you and slowly crept my way forward trying to get over to the side of the highway so I didn't get hit.
And you can see some of the jackknife right there. There's an RV that jackknifed sideways on these eastbound lanes of I-70. And then just some more of the semis, SUVs, box trucks, you name it, they were involved in this crash. And so it is going to take some time to clear this out. 19 people we're hearing were injured and taken to hospitals. Luckily, no fatalities. Reporting from just east of the Eisenhower Johnson tunnels, I'm Matt Renew, 9 News. Kyle, normally I wouldn't advise anybody doing live reports to stay in the middle of an eastbound lanes of I-70, but we're getting away with it today because of the mess that's behind us.
Imagine so, man. It seems like if nothing else, perhaps low speeds kept that from being a lot worse than it could have been. Matt Renew, thank you.
You're absolutely right.
Let's bring in meteorologist Chris Bianchi now to talk about the weather conditions up there at the time of this, right? We knew that snow was going to be coming. We also know that we haven't exactly had a lot of winter driving practice this year. But what was going on at the moment?
Yeah, so Kyle, I think the standout weather feature at the time were winds. It was gusting about 30 to 35 miles an hour at the tunnels. And you heard that from the person that Matt Renew was interviewing there a second ago, that the wind was really the issue. So this is what the radar looked like there in the tunnels right around here. Likely light to moderate snow, as you heard, was sticking a little bit, but roads are mainly wet. Probably the big factor of the tunnels was the wind. Again, 30, 35 mile an hour winds, that is enough to certainly make that visibility a bit on the lower side. Snow still falling at the tunnels as well as west, as you saw from Matt a second ago as well. You had west of Vail Pass, we're seeing some steadier snow. Here in Denver, a few rain showers. Nothing too dramatic for us here in town. Did have a pretty good downpour in Boulder earlier on. Northeast Plains getting the steadiest and heaviest of the rain right now. I'm going to take a full look in that forecast in just a few minutes.
Thank you. Natural disasters are not political. Though as the Trump administration again denies disaster funding for Colorado, as the president promises to punish this state over election claims, it's fair to ask what happens if disaster aid in America becomes overtly partisan. Our Mark Salinger looks at what happens next.
When rivers and creeks in southwestern Colorado flooded last October, there was an expectation the federal government would help Colorado recover. That expectation was wrong.
This is not a red or blue issue. These are residents that are needing assistance.
Matt Salka understands it. He's a Democratic County Commissioner in La Plata County. This week he found out the Trump administration yet again blocked emergency FEMA funding to help his county recover. denying an appeal to a major disaster declaration submitted by the governor.
Wapata County did everything right. We documented the damage, we met the thresholds, and we made our case.
FEMA validated more than $13 million worth of damage across La Plata, Archuleta, and Mineral counties from the flooding. Another $27 million worth of damage were verified by FEMA from the Lee and Elk fires in Rio Blanco County. The Trump administration blocked federal disaster aid for both the floods and the fires.
We should never have a president who plays politics with disaster relief money.
Democratic Senator Michael Bennett says Colorado can no longer rely on federal aid, even after a disaster. He's working to introduce legislation that would take the president out of the equation.
We're having conversations with my colleagues in the Senate to see if we can pass a piece of legislation that would allow for Congress to make these judgments without the president's involvement so that we can take his politics out of it.
But it's very hard for us to be able to make significant repairs, at the state level.
Kevin Klein is the state's emergency management director. He knows recovery efforts will take longer and Coloradans will have to foot more of the bill regardless of who they voted for.
Some projects just won't get done. Some it will just take longer to do. Some will get done through other means.
The recovery here in Colorado continues. Now without the money that was once expected from Washington.
It should not be political. These are residents that are needing assistance to help lower that burden.
So while Colorado is, of course, a blue state, the fires in Rio Blanco County, for example, and some of the flooding in southwestern Colorado happened in red counties that voted for President Trump. In fact, the congressman who represents La Plata, Archuleta, and Mineral counties is a Republican. We asked Jeff Hurd, the congressman, for an interview today about President Trump denying money from his county, but did not hear back. He, along with the entire Colorado delegation, had previously told the Trump administration, Kyle, to approve this funding.
In that way, Mark, it reminds me of another story you've covered for us, which is the Trump administration denying the funding for the Arkansas Valley Conduit, the water project in deep red southeast Colorado.
Also saying people there saying this isn't a political issue. This is just we want water. Similar to this, we just need to recover. A lot of people saying keep politics out of these things that shouldn't be political.
And at the end of the day, it's mainly Trump voters in Colorado being hurt by this stuff. All right, Mark Salinger, thank you. The governor is calling on teachers and the Sheridan School District to get back to the bargaining table and work it out. The union says that is happening this week. Student attendance has really fallen off sharply 10 days into the teachers' strike. Teachers in Sheridan and Arapahoe County want better pay, more transparency from the district, and union recognition for school staff like bus drivers and paraprofessionals. This is the first major teacher strike in Colorado since 2019, and it's forced some temporary school building closures until the district could get extra staff in to cover classes. The strikes also led to calls to recall the entire school board in Sheridan. The Democrats who run the state capitol have passed a stack of bills designed to reduce shootings by requiring law enforcement agencies and gun dealers to crack down on gun theft. One bill would require law enforcement agencies to tell a federal database that tracks firearm sales whenever they recover stolen firearms or confiscate guns from domestic abusers. The bill's sponsors say sharing that data across jurisdictions will help track guns before they're used in crimes. Critics argue it's too much of a burden on law enforcement. Republicans in the state Senate opposed the bill requiring gun dealers to boost their security, report stolen or lost firearms to the state, and keep records of gun sales or face fines of up to $75,000. They argued the requirements, the possible fines, would drive small businesses out of business. But the bill's sponsors say dealers have a role to play in preventing gun violence.
I've had at least one gun store, and I'm sure more than that, have already left the state, moved across the border into Kansas to a state that is friendly, that wants business, no matter what it is. Here's another bill that is just chasing more business out of the state.
None of this is radical. It is the kind of targeted, practical, regulatory update that happens when you actually stand up a division, send people into the field, and listen to what they find.
Those bills passed over Republican opposition, and they're now headed to the governor for his signature. A new law in our state was supposed to make it easier for food truck operators to roll from city to city. Businesses say they're actually running into new roadblocks.
We cannot continue to burden the business community, It's just so hard to start a business.
And 60 years of haircuts means one barber has heard and told a lifetime of stories.
That's next. The idea was to make it easier for food trucks to operate in various places in Colorado without having to get redundant permits. The law to cut out the red tape has not been easy to implement. Our Angeline McCall explains.
Welcome, everyone, again. Can you all hear us?
For 9 years, they waited and worked to pass a bill.
This is extremely important because we are removing barriers.
Last year, House Bill 1295 got a yes vote, allowing statewide permits for health and fire licenses for food trucks, rather than requiring different permits in different counties.
I know that every jurisdiction works a little bit differently.
Implementation started with monthly conversations like this, even before the bill became law in January.
So this will reduce the amount of bureaucracy for people to understand exactly what are the most important licenses and permits and inspections that are needed.
Maria Gonzalez, founder and CEO of Adelante, says they started conversations and learned a lot of counties were confused, even some resistant.
It hasn't been easy. You know, there's been some municipalities that don't want to do it, you know, that they have their own ways of doing things. And that's fine, you know, that's local control, but this is a state law.
So they started the conversation knowing businesses would sacrifice otherwise.
We cannot continue to burden the business community, you know? It's just so hard to start a business, to maintain it, and then if we add more barriers to get into the business, it's just not feasible.
It's made the difference for food truck owners.
Efectivamente, 100% mejor porque eso anteriormente era muy tedioso asistir a cada dependencia para solicitar un permiso.
For Ulises Gramaldo, it didn't just save time.
Entonces ya todo se simplifica a un solo pago y ahorrándonos también lo que es tiempo y dinero. En los costos.
For food truck owners to actually feel the benefit, though, municipalities need to be on board first.
Nobody had a roadmap, so we had to create that roadmap with communications, meetings, outreach.
That's going to be as comprehensive as this.
Part of ensuring it's implemented the right way comes first with the right conversations.
Stay in the loop. We'll send you more information as it comes up, but we're starting the first.
Adelante runs a program called Sal y Pimiento, or salt and pepper in English, that works directly with food truck owners as they're starting their businesses, which is why they worked so hard on this bill to get passed in the first place. Kyle?
I appreciate you tracking it through the process to see, you know, is it working as people intended? Angeline, thank you. Double dip of Chris Bianchi in this show. Why are we so lucky today, sir?
Kyle, I need you to do something for me. Can you raise your right hand for me and repeat after me as well?
I absolutely can.
All right. I, Kyle Clark.
Hereby swear. Hereby swear.
Not to plant my garden until after Mother's Day.
Oh, that's easy. Yeah, not to plant my garden until after Mother's Day. Yeah, I'm not a fool.
Well, it seems like a lot of folks, based off of this forecast, me posting it, have already planted those gardens. I get it. It was 80 degrees 8 times last month, and we've been in the 70s most of this month so far. But you got that coming up here on Saturday morning. 22 degrees. So those tulips, wave goodbye to them. They're going to be gone by Saturday morning unless you do something about it. So just keep that in mind, though. Those gardens are loving this. A little bit of rain across the Denver area. Some snow in the mountains, mostly along and north of I-70. In Denver, a few sprinkles, mostly east of town. We'll keep a few of those over the next couple of hours. Weld and Logan counties getting some showers as well. This will continue to pull its way north and east. A few more showers possible in Denver. Some snow showers in the mountains. Those will be mainly done by midnight. But then that 7-day forecast, potential impact alert for Friday because of snow in Denver. And then it cools down to just the 20s by Saturday morning, warming back up for the early part of next week.
May I make a recommendation? Something that is not our journalism, but I think you might find interesting. I mean, hey, if you're interested in the news about the news today, and we know a lot of Next viewers are, I think you will be interested in a discussion that I moderated at CU's Conference on World Affairs in Boulder today. It examined a variety of challenges and opportunities in journalism at the moment, including what's happening with media outlets being bought up by billionaires or otherwise consolidated. Here's the take of CNBC anchor and CU Boulder alum Carl Quintanilla.
When I went to school here, I interned at the Denver Post, and every discussion involved the Rocky Mountain News. What does the Rocky have? Does the Rocky have it? Is the Rocky going to go with it tonight? Should we go with it tonight? And that is where you get your competitive news nature comes from. And once one side of that boat lists, you know, not only are you not getting the intensity of a news gathering, but you're also not getting the other viewpoint. All right, so we missed, Rocky got that story. How can we add to the story? You're not getting that second look at a story, which might involve a different point of view than you would have gotten otherwise. So that's, I mean, we've seen that in local newspapers. If that dynamic migrates to local television, that's just an added tragedy.
You can find a link to the YouTube version of our full hour plus conversation linked on the next social media accounts and in the next section of 9news.com.
Come to this shop every morning for all those years, and never was there one day I didn't want to come.
That is dedication. After tens of thousands of haircuts over six decades, a couple in the barber business calls it quits. Think of all the hot goss they've heard. That's what 80-year-olds call it, by the way, hot goss. That's next. Six decades of cutting hair, hearing stories that span generations. Our Byron Reed takes us to Thornton to meet an 88-year-old who's decided maybe he'll try retirement.
Good barbershops stand the test of time.
And this fella here is a guy that kind of mapped out the little town of East Lake.
For 88-year-old Clint Egan, laughter has been the secret to longevity.
Laughter is the big thing in this shop. And as you know, laughter is the best medicine.
Egan is the owner of East Lake Barbershop in Thornton, where the son of Clippers tells a story 62 years in the making.
And I told the people, my friends at that time, that someday I was going to own a barbershop in Eastlake. And that's kind of how it come about.
Clint and his wife Gail ran the shop together for decades, 6 days a week.
We started out with young men, young families, and then these families have grown up and we're cutting their children's hair.
Egan opened Eastlake Barbershop back in 1964 inside a building that's been here since 1911.
I used to blame the situation on some of the things I said that were a little offbeat on the fact that I worked in this shop for 62 years almost in this 20 by 20 room.
Now, at 88 years old, Clint's retiring after cutting hair for generations of families.
We've come to this shop every morning for all those years and never was there one day I didn't want to come.
It was very surprising to me, so glad I called and made it in one last time before he hands it over.
The Egans have sold their business to a longtime customer.
I'm the new owner, yeah.
Who's planning to carry on the work they've started.
Man, it's an honor to take over the shop. Clint and Gail mean the world to this community.
His wife Gail retired 3 weeks ago, but says there's still work to be done.
We've got a lot of catch up to do. We've got a lot of yard work to do.
Gail and I work together real well, even in the yard.
The laughter that fills the rooms of this barbershop helped build a legacy that will live on one haircut at a time.
I just wish them all luck in the world with their families and their lives.
For next,
take care of yourself.
You too.
I'm Byron Reed.
Oh, that's the sweetest. Clint officially hangs up the Clippers on Saturday. Back with your feedback next. Feedback from Shirley, who says, your May I Make a Recommendation segment is always good, especially appropriate tonight. Shirley says, thanks for playing such a long clip. I enjoyed the perspective of CNBC's Carl Quintanilla on where the news is going these days, and I thought that you would appreciate it as well. A text from somebody who apparently was in the audience, enjoyed the panel at the Conference on World Affairs today. Are you doing another panel Wednesday or Thursday? No, one and done, had to get back here and make the donuts. Plus, my knowledge of world affairs is pretty limited outside news. And Bob says, thanks for the story about Clint Egan and Eastlake Barbershop, a customer for 56 years. Wow, see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.